Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Pola sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we're going to have a hodgepodge of a smorgasbord, if you will, of good Chicago sports talk. Nothing fancy going on, but we will have some good stuff for you. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. The season is in full swing. Don't miss out. It's some of the best fun you can have for the money. So head on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, after a week hiatus, how have you been, my friend?
I've been doing just fine. How are you?
I can't complain. You know, the groundhog told us that winter is coming to an end early, so I'm going to believe the prognosticating rodent.
Yeah, I am not always trusting of that said that rodent.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's Chicago. Winter's going to happen.
I hope it's right.
Yeah, that's all we can do. It's winter's going to end when winter's going to end.
Yeah, that's true. It's funny, though. You went from Friday, where it was like a negative wind chill, to today, where it was in like the mid-40s, and with the sun shining, it actually felt pretty nice out.
Yeah, actually, it was pretty nice out. I was home most of the day. We went out for breakfast early this morning to a really good spot in Roscoe Village called Lucy's Cafe. They had, I love French toast, and they had some really good French toast. With a homemade peach butter on top.
You know, I love going out for breakfast because, you know, there are so many breakfast foods I like. Hash browns, over easy eggs, French toast, waffles, pancakes, like corned beef hash, sausage patties, sausage links. And, you know, you can, when you go to a really good, like, breakfast place and you get a nice smorgasbord, that is just one of the best feelings. And, you know, I got to tell you, I haven't had French toast in a while, and that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, it's not like I'm an excellent breakfast chef, so, you know, I don't really make French toast. And I don't go out to breakfast that often.
I don't either.
Yeah, it's, you know, during the week, it's like I'm not going to go before work. And then on the weekends, you know, things just get hectic. But, yeah, I went out and I was like, man, I really want some French toast. And there, you know, many moons ago, there was a weird, at that same spot, was like the best French toast I ever had. But it was this weird restaurant run by a cult, like no joke, legit cult. It was called Victory's Banner. And I knew about them because my best friend, when he was living in New York, the cult, that's where they were based out of, right by his apartment. And, they had two restaurants there. One was called Smile of the Beyond, and I forgot what the other one was called. But they had, he's like, man, they opened one in Chicago. So we went, and they had like the best French toast, and I Googled them because I was like, man, I really want some French toast. And I was like, they closed down, but it's the people who put the restaurant, the new restaurant there, apparently have very good French toast too. And I went this morning, and I'm like, thumbs up for this French toast, legit.
Yeah, you know what's funny is if you go into that restaurant by the cult, you're going to come out wearing like a white robe and holding a candle and talking about how the Enlightened One is going to carry you away on his wooden rocket ship.
No, this cult leader, he was a weirdo. He was into like meditation, marathons, and being strong, and it's so weird. His name is Sri Chinmoy, and there's like, if you Google him, there's like a picture of him like lifting up an airplane. And I was in his restaurant in New York, and they had just randomly the person who had the world record time for running the marathon was in the restaurant, and they put them in this booth that was elevated like 2 feet above, you know, like maybe a foot above everybody else. And the whole serving staff came up and like serenaded them with a song about marathons. And it was, I guess the time was something like 2:05:42 for the marathon. So they came up and they were like 2:05:42. And they were like chanting. It was so weird, but the food was so good.
So, well, as long as they have good food.
That's all I really cared about. And I'm not trying to join a cult. I'm just trying to, you know,
enjoy some good grub.
Pad the old belly.
Yeah, exactly.
Where should we start today?
Well, I have plenty of baseball thoughts, considering the fact that players are starting to report and things are being said.
I want to start with things being said for 500.
Okay, all right. Ding, ding, ding.
I want to start with a sentiment shared that Yu Darvish and I share.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we're starting to get some players that are supporting this idea as well. And I really want to see where it goes. And it's that I think the Astros World Series title should be vacated over the cheating scandal.
You know, I really wanted to bring up Yu Darvish today as well. I actually just completed writing up an article for Cubby's Crib on FanSided about what he said, and that's going to be coming out soon, so be on the eye for that if you read Cubby's Crib. You can check it out on my Twitter once it's out. Basically, what I'm talking about is the fact that if Rob Manfred is going to sit there, you know, in spineless fashion and not do anything about this scandal and continue with the so-called discipline, I put that in air quotes, that they're getting, with nothing else added to said discipline, or not even the idea that they might consider more, because it sounds like, according to him, it's over, it's done, nothing more is going to be done or considered, then, you know what? Then let the players speak out, because the players are the faces of the league. And you know what? If the higher-ups aren't going to do it, but the players have the courage to, then that should be encouraged. Because I think it's abhorrent that nothing else is even being considered. Because it seems like every day, more and more stuff is coming out. You're hearing about how the whole organization was in on it. You're hearing about the way they carried themselves as they did this whole thing. And not only that, the way they're carrying themselves now, their robotic apologies, which seemed like reading off a transcript, the fact that their owner doesn't take responsibility and doesn't think that it changed the game or made any negative effects whatsoever, when you were just proven that the whole organization was in on it. I mean, it's ridiculous. And Darvish and Cody Bellinger and Chris Bryant and others are not afraid to come out and speak up, because that's what should happen.
And I'm not pro handing the Dodgers the title.
No.
Because I just think that it becomes you just put an asterisk. There's no champion that year.
You know, I've been saying since this stuff came out, for the most part, that I'm like, well, you can't change the past. The games were played. What good does it do? But the more that comes out, and the way the Astros are handling this, I lean more and more now towards vacating it. And again, it's hard to vacate a title. It really is. But man, as time goes on, it just makes me support the idea more.
NCAA has no problems doing it.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, though, those aren't paid professionals. I mean, they already reaped the rewards of a championship, you know, financially and all the merch and whatnot. But, I mean, it has been done in the sports world before.
Yeah, I just think that's the right thing to do. And it, because right now, the general manager, you know, paid a price. The manager paid a price. The organization is paying a price. The players really haven't paid a price.
And the ones actually doing it, yeah.
And I you know, I read a counterpoint about it that they if they wanted them to cooperate at all, they couldn't really punish them. But I think you're seeing now. You know, you saw it with Dallas Keuchel defending, you know, their title. You're seeing, you know, other George Springer defending Jose Altuve's batting title. You're
buzz,
seeing them,
buzz,
you, right?
Buzz,
you are buzz. Seeing, you're seeing them defend the things they did, and that's the frustrating part. Is
look what Yu Darvish brought up today about Carlos Correa against you, Cody Bellinger. He brought that up. Darvish did.
Yeah, the players are not acknowledging that what they did was wrong, and it's part in them winning the World Series. They were a good team, but you know they had the added benefit, and that shouldn't go unnoticed. And I'm really, you know, supportive of. The pitcher that's suing the Astros organization.
Yeah, what's his name? I can't remember
Mike
his name.
Mike Bolsinger.
Mike Bolsinger, yeah. Now, I mean, this isn't me supporting the Astros in any way. I'm just saying I don't think it's really going to go anywhere in court. They're probably going to throw the case out. But I think the action of filing this lawsuit at least speaks volumes for how seriously people are taking this. I think it's more of a sending of a message, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think if nothing else, it's going to push the envelope. Either he's going to get a payday because they're going to, the Astros are going to, you know, not go to court with this. And if they do go to court, then all baseball's investigation gets opened up. I mean, so here's the merit. It's, can you throw it out if Major League Baseball said there was a cheating scandal? And the organization fired their general manager and their coach. So there definitely is something.
I hope it doesn't get thrown out. I truly hope not.
Yeah. So, you know, was he a good pitcher? No, but you know, there's people whose livelihoods were impacted by this. Because if you're a guy who's struggling to hang on in the league, if you're able to hang on one more season as a middle reliever, what are you going to make, like $3 million, $2
million? Mm-hmm.
Million? I mean, that's a sizable chunk of money. And just, you know, but if you're already on the borderline and you get rocked by this team and they go, well, look at this. We can't compete with the Astros if we have this guy on our team. Then you jettison him. And suddenly, that's the end of his career.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's only 32 at this point. You know, and he's not even, I guess he's not even asking for a payday, because I'm reading now, he demands that the Astros donate the $31 million in bonuses that the club got from their the World Series to charities. So he's not even asking for money.
And that's the way to approach it. I think that is a very honorable way to approach it.
And yeah, I hope they win. And you know, baseball's the good thing is, I guess, if he's bringing this into a court of law, they can subpoena anything from Major League Baseball's records that they can't, you know, part of the investigation.
Sure.
So it can bring everything to light. If baseball's trying to hide anything. So I think it's good. It's really, You know, it's one thing if you're standing on second base and you're trying to, you know, relay signals to the guy batting. You know, that's, then the next time up, they plunk you. Like, that's kind of in baseball. You know, those are the types of things. But to use the technology to cheat, to flat out just cheat, and then, you know, to after you've already been proven that you did it, you people have been fired, you lost draft picks, you lost money, and the player's still just like, nah, it's our title, we want it, we deserved it fair and square.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Carlos Correa saying, know the facts. All right, Carlos, then what are the facts? Then tell us. If there's nothing to hide, then tell us. But he won't tell us.
Right. So
what does that say?
So it's frustrating. You know, we want to know what happened, and we want to make sure the sport is clean. And here's the thing. Here's sort of the reality is baseball in popularity is not on the rise.
No, and you have these whole schemes to try to quote unquote make it more popular by implementing weird new rules, by suggesting a new playoff format where top seeds get to pick their opponents, and you have all these weird things. You know, unfortunately, the way they're trying to fix the game just makes them look more insecure, which I think is a big turnoff to people, where you can just show them how great a World Series can be. And I think that can help you right there against more followers. But, you know, as you said, in the state of baseball as it is, it's only doing more damage that they're not disciplining this team further. It's going to turn people who are already following the game away. And it is going to prevent more people from coming in. The way not only the Astros are handling this, but by the way Rob Manfred and the league is handling this. It's making their case worse.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's if baseball wants to strengthen it, they need to make sure things are clean. They need to get this right. They need to, the changes that they're implementing that you alluded to need to be done right. This scandal needs to be done right, because this is a major black eye. And this sport, you know, the younger folks aren't as into it as my generation and the generations before.
No. And it's sad to see a lot of this being self-inflicted. You know what I mean?
Like it's really bad. You're right. It's self-inflicted. And it's a major black eye, and I'm glad that you have Chris Bryant and Yu Darvish and a few others voicing their opinions. And you have somebody that's brave enough to sue the Houston Astros.
Well, I was waiting for Yu Darvish, because we all know the involvement of Yu Darvish in the 2017 World Series. So I think his words are going to end up being some of the most impactful by any of the players.
Right. And, you know, you have Dallas Keuchel, who now plays in Chicago, who's defending their World Series title.
Yeah, I got to tell you, those words were a bit disappointing in my opinion.
I agree. I mean, there was a half-assed apology in there. But yeah.
I just hope the White Sox sake it's not a stain on them by any means, because they don't deserve to have that as they're on the rise. I don't think it should be, but it's just a little disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, I think by the time the season rolls around, it's probably going to blow over unless this lawsuit takes foot, or you start getting more traction with players saying, yeah, they should vacate this title. I'm not sure how much leg this hat will have going on. You know, there'll definitely be words about it once the season starts, but you know, I think I don't think it'll impact the White Sox. It's just kind of an ugly spot, and I'm surprised that they don't, you know, they as an organization didn't address it somehow.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it will negatively impact them either. I don't think it's going to make him any worse, so to speak. And I don't think what he said is, like, worth, like, saying he's, you know, awful person, worst person ever. The White Sox should release him right now. No, that's not the case at all. It's just, it's not something you really want to hear, is really all I'm trying to say. It's... I mean, I know it's probably hard for a guy to come out and say, look, I don't think we should have won the title. I don't think he's ever going to say that. I just think his best option right there would have just kind of don't say anything.
Even if he would have said, you know, I'm sorry for what happened. That's not up to me. It just sort of drops
it. And then moved on from it. Yeah.
Is that's not up to me. I'm going to... You know, I play for the White Sox now, and I'm trying to win a World Series with them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's probably his attitude going forward. I think he's the type of guy who's going to work hard and not let the past, you know, affect him too much. He's going to keep working hard with the White Sox and give everything he can for the White Sox. Like you said, I think this will be... If nothing really big comes out in the next few months with this whole scandal, I don't think there's going to be that much that's going to happen with him or some of the other former players. I really don't. Because, you know, obviously Dallas Keuchel's not the only notable name that's no longer on the Astros. And, I mean, what Keuchel said compared to some of the others, it's nowhere near where, like, Carlos Correa has been or Bregman has been, or even like George Springer. It's pretty light compared to those, because Keuchel didn't go out of his way and, like, you know, rip into specific people like Correa did with Bellinger. Like, he didn't do that. He didn't really get personal with anyone. He just kind of defended his position, which, again, I wish he kind of didn't say what he said, but the words could have been a lot worse is what I'm trying to get at.
But it's, I mean, honestly, I don't think they will vacate the title.
I don't think so either. I think they're pretty clear that that's not going to happen.
Yeah. Let's see. Chris Bryant lost his, I don't remember if we had talked about it. He lost his arbitration, not his arbitration, his
grievance
of his service time, which I think everybody expected. I don't think anybody expected it to go the other way. It just took a lot longer than I think anybody expected.
Right.
And I really believe him when he says that there's no animosity. I think it's important if they're going to fight this battle, the best chance they have to fight it is with certain people. And if it's somebody that goes on and wins the Rookie of the Year and then wins the MVP, that's probably a good place to start.
Yeah. I mean, I look at that whole press conference and I just say, wow. I just say, wow, that was great. That was what you want to hear. And, you know, people could say, oh, he just went up there and said this, this, and this. But like you said, I think he was being very sincere, because he mentioned the whole rumor of him getting, like, a $200 million mega deal. And he's like, well, where was that? I didn't hear that. He's no longer on Twitter because he's tired of all the crap. And I just want to say something really quick about that. He expressed his hate for Twitter and why he doesn't want to be on it. He only sees the rumors because friends texted him and whatnot. And I've seen comments saying that he's soft for not being on Twitter. And I say, how on earth can you call him soft for not wanting to deal with social media bullshit? How can you call him soft for that? How can you call a guy who once took a 96-mile-an-hour fastball to the head and barely flinched soft. How do you call a guy who's had a lot of nagging injuries and have tried to get back on the field as soon as possible soft? That's just ridiculous to me. I applaud for Chris Bryant because he was very honest and straightforward about how he views rumors and reporting on social media, and he expressed his comments, or he expressed his thoughts in comments that are very articulate, very well put together, and also making it clear that he's not here for all the David Kaplan crappy reports and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and here's my thoughts on this, and I agree with him. Like, on a personal level, you just get tired of it. You know, these guys are human beings. It's not like, oh, you know, they're just this fictional character on a soap opera. They're real people going out there and performing. And, you know, I know we've seen him with nagging injuries the last few years, and you know, we want to see the MVP numbers again. But as a fan, here's my thoughts on Chris Bryant. Is, am I okay with them trading him? Yeah, it takes a big hit, but if you can get a real good return and you don't think you can re-sign him, then, you know, that's what's best for the organization. I don't see us winning this year, and then you lose all that. You know, do you think you can win next year with him? But looking at what the Red Sox got for Mookie Betts, and it wasn't that good of a haul. I mean, honestly, the Dodgers went in with like, what, four or five players on the minor league baseball's top 100 list, got Mookie Betts, and didn't trade any of their players on the top 100 list. Like, that's a steal. Yeah. That's a steal. They stole Mookie Betts.
Yeah, they did. Stole him cold.
If the Cubs were to get a deal like that, then absolutely no, I don't want him traded. It's not a personal thing. I don't want him. If we don't think we can re-sign him, or it's going to go down to he's going to become a free agent and then it's the highest bidder, you know, do you like your chances of being able to just be the highest bidder? My goal is to see the Cubs win as much as possible.
Yeah, I think right now Chris Bryant is just ready to play some dang baseball, and I'm ready for another season with him. Look, I think if the team just goes down the crapper and you're looking for a huge retool / rebuild, then yeah, you pull the trigger on a Bryant trade. But right now, I don't think you get better by trading Chris Bryant. I don't care what kind of money they're spending. You're a better team with Chris Bryant. And Chris Bryant, I think he's ready to go out there. And he's going to go out and show the Cubs what they could potentially miss by trading him. And, you know, I have no doubt there's legitimacy to a lot of the trade rumors with Bryant. Not in the fact that they had anything serious, but they were definitely making calls and shopping around, which, I mean, is something you do, but I think the shopping was a bit more serious this time around, just considering that payroll is a problem and there's probably some uncertainties of him coming back when he's a free agent. And, you know, Chris Bryant kind of expressed his feelings on that. Yeah, I think a lot of the feelings of him not coming back, the fear, I should say, has to do with the Scott Boras fear, pretty much, that he's going to go out and look for the most ridiculous contract offer out there and not necessarily stay with the Cubs. I do believe Chris Bryant himself wants to stay with the Cubs, like he said. I do believe that. I mean, he's won a World Series here. He's won an MVP here. He's been embraced by the fan base. But I also think that because the talks, the rumors were pretty rampant this offseason, that he's coming in thinking, well, I'm going to show them what they would miss. I don't think he has, like he said to us, that he doesn't have any grudges. He said he doesn't hold grudges, and I believe him on that. But I do think there's got to be some motivation for him to really have himself an MVP-like season like he did a few years ago. It's just, it's natural. It's natural in a competitor's mind to show your higher-ups what you've got.
And as far as the Scott Boras thing, you don't sign or you don't go with Scott Boras unless you want to leverage all of the money you can. It's just that's the fact. You don't go, I want to stick with this team for my entire career. You know, the things that you say if you really want to be on a team forever, like Jose Abreu. Jose Abreu is not going out and signing Scott Boras as an agent because it's, that's not how he operates. You know, you may still want to play if you're Chris Bryant, want to play for the Cubs, but you know, it's going to have to be, they have to pony up as well.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, it's going to be a two-way tango type deal.
Yeah. I want to play with you, but you better pony up because I'm not giving you a discount.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's going to be one of those things where the Cubs can't sell short, but they do have leverage because he does like it here, but the leverage is only going to go so far. Again, takes two to tango.
Let's see. Anything else with Cubs you want to talk about? Javi Baez, you know, there's contract extension talks going on, but, you know, there's nothing yet. They're up and down, quote, per Jesse or Gordon Whitmire.
Yeah, I don't know when that's going to happen. It might be one of those things where it just comes out of nowhere. Hey, you got an extension. I think eventually they do work it out, in my opinion. I just don't know exactly when that's going to be. But right now, I'm looking at camp and hoping everyone stays healthy. Obviously, that's going to be a big factor this season. And I'm at that point in Cubs camp where I'm looking at the roster and I'm looking at the season and I'm looking at the circumstances. And I think, you know what? I think there is room for them to be better than last year. Reasonable thought that they are going to be better than last year. At the same time, I also tell myself they haven't made many changes with the roster. So things are going to have to go right for them to go on a run. Now, there is one more thing related to this that I want to talk about the Cubs. Did you hear the stuff that Joe Maddon said recently?
Yeah, I wanted to bring that up. Is, if, you know, go ahead with it. But my point was going to be, when does Joe Maddon shut up and just focus on his job and his new team?
Well, I think it's one of those things where the Chicago sports media doesn't like to let things go, so they keep having to talk to him and dig up things about him and whatnot. Look, I think it's pretty obvious to me that Joe Maddon was ready to move on, and there were disagreements between him and the front office. It was obvious during the season. He wasn't going to say it at the very end when they were trying to part ways in the best way possible, but you knew that was the case. And Javi Baez made some comments today about preparation and work ethic and whatnot, and you see more and more quotes about how lax things were. You know, I will always appreciate Joe Maddon for what he did for the World Series, for turning things around. But it feels like every passing day that moving on was a very good move. I think that he'd really run his course. I think it kind of sucks hearing these words from some of the players because it almost felt like, just be you, do whatever, you know, whatever. I'm out of here next year. I mean, I don't want to say he didn't care because I think he truly did care throughout, but I certainly don't think that he was making much effort to make any big adjustments philosophically or just as the season went on, when things got worse and worse, when the defense was bad, when the team was blowing games, and when you had certain players being dopes, cough, cough, Addison Russell. There was no effort to try to kind of anchor things down because sometimes I felt like Joe Mann was like, well, it'll kind of work things out. I got my ways and it'll all work things out. And, you know, that's not what happened last year. So I just think that the whole Joe Mann shtick just got old and it was completely burned out by last year.
Yeah, I agree. And he said that, you know, after the 2018 season, that the front office wanted to control more things and change things, and rightfully so. I mean, if they come to you and say, hey, these things need to change, and you're just like, whatever, man, that's not really the way to go about it. Is clearly there needed to be some change. And then, you know, we saw an even bigger setback in 2019. Things definitely needed to change.
And I don't think he really protested much because he's like, well, you know what? I got one more year. I'm just going to ride it out and then I'm out of here.
Yeah, I think that's the same feeling as you know, everything just happens so weird between Joe's agent and Joe and the front office, and I think everybody knew what was going to happen. Well, maybe not him getting hired on with the Angels, but I think everybody knew he was going to be gone. But just the dance that they did beforehand was just awkward and weird.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, because it's a bad look to fire a guy that recently from winning your first World Series in over 100 years. But it's also a bad form to just let him, you know, be a lame duck knowing you're going to let him go. And it's a bad look for him to protest and fight, you know, knowing that this is going to happen and that you're not really happy either.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird situation because could you imagine if Joe Maddon got fired after 2018? Like, I think if that was the case, there would be a lot more people upset that Joe was gone. I think more and more people kind of changed their thoughts after last season. They're like, yeah, it probably was the right time. He ran his course. But after 2018, when they won 95 games, I think that would have been a bit of a harder sell to the fan base.
Yeah, I mean, it's like when the Bears fired Lovie Smith. Yeah, it was definitely right, but then after a couple of bad coaches, you're like, well, maybe we should have kept Lovie Smith. Like, well, no, just because you made bad choices after that doesn't make that a bad choice.
Right. Lovie Smith's time, I mean, his time was up with the Bears, and I think a lot of people knew it. But yeah, the follow-up hire was not good.
Yeah, had you let Lovie go on another year, you would have seen, I think all the fans would have been like, oh yeah, get lost Lovie. But it's the same with Joe. Is that, you know, you fire him after 2018, there's going to be a significant number of people that are just mad at the organization about it and blame that as the reason why, you know, things don't get better for 2019 or 2020. And you're like, well, if you wouldn't have fired Joe, but you let him manage in 2019, and then suddenly everyone's like, all right, ready. We're all in on this.
Right. Here's what I totally see happening. The Cubs get off to a slow start. The Angels get off to a great start. And then everyone says we never should have let go of Joe, yada, yada, yada. Because you know that's going to happen. You know, I think Joe has a chance to do very well with the Angels. And you know what? Frankly, I think Joe Maddon will just kind of be happier there because he was with the Angels organization for so long. Like, that's his home right there. The environment he's in is more him. I think one of the reasons Joe was kind of ready to move on, I'm sure he loved Wrigley Field and the Cubs fan base and all that and his team, but I feel like knowing he had an opportunity to go to a place that was more suitable for him and his personality, and just kind of seeing how Chicago culture can be when things go bad, I think that's kind of one of the reasons he was also ready to move on, not just philosophical differences between the front office and him. And the other thing I really want to reiterate is we're not trying to say that letting go of Joe Maddon is going to solve all the problems. No, no. The front office is not exempt from criticism, neither are the players. But you know what? When you're a team, you have to identify the problems everywhere. And you know what? I think that even if the Cubs don't turn into big-time contenders, if there's one thing I think will happen under David Ross is you'll see a more focused team that I think plays just smarter baseball. They're not going to make as many boneheaded mistakes. They're not going to make as many errors because they regressed so hard with the defense last year. And I can't help but think if the lame duck Joe Mann status didn't hurt their fundamental play a little bit. I mean, there's a reason you have coaching staffs. The coaching staff has been a revolving door under Mann in the past few years. I think that's hurt the team. If you establish a new culture under David Ross, a man that this core respected and looked up to when they won a World Series, and they're a bit more direct with certain things, then I think you might see cleaner baseball being played by the Cubs, even if it's not on par with the Dodgers or the Yankees, and they're not really World Series contenders. I think you could at least see cleaner baseball being played by the Cubs next year. I mean, is that crazy or?
No. I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I think coaching can affect a lot of the little things, and a lot of the little things went bad last year.
They definitely the little things went off the rail, and we've talked about it ad nauseum. You know, the fielding was bad, contact hitting was bad. There was just a lot of bad approaches, and you know. You start cleaning up the fundamentals and you start seeing better results. I mean, just look, this is clearly a team that can field much better. Will they be as good as they were when they won the World Series? Obviously no. But if you just get better, then your pitching is better because of, you know, the you see better pitching numbers when you have a better fielding team behind you.
Yeah, naturally.
So you start, you get better pitching numbers, you get better results from guys that you have. And, you know, that's a small step there. And that's coaching. You know, guys don't just forget how to field. You just start to see sloppy play, or you see guys, get frustrated by their appearances at the plate and then it affects them on the field.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, that's all coaching managing.
Yeah, those are things that, you know, that matter, that we don't really get to see behind the scenes as much, and things that we don't really have legit expert opinions on because, you know, we're not major league coaches or players, but they are little things that are important.
Yeah, I want to see, you know, so I guess I want to wrap it all back up is I just want to see Joe manage the Angels. Is, you know, just stop talking about the Cubs.
Yeah, I think it's over.
It's a bad look. It looks like sour grapes at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the Angels manager. David Ross is the Cubs manager. So we move forward with that.
So let's see, is there anything else Cubs related?
I don't have anything else. I have a few White Sox, but I think I'm pretty much done with Cubs.
Yeah, I think so too. Do you want to start in with your White Sox? I only had a couple of things.
I don't have much at all. I know there's a few, little nagging injuries with some of the guys, but it sounds like they're all going to be okay. But I think just my main thought on the White Sox this spring is, you know, we're going to see a lot of guys compete for, you know, I mean, they're not really competing for a spot on the roster, but they're kind of competing for spots in the order. Because you can really shuffle around this lineup because there's a lot of firepower in it. So you got a lot of questions of who's going to bat leadoff, who's going to primarily play second base? I mean, your plan is to have Luis Robert on the team for opening day. You know you're going to have Aloy and Yoan and Tim Anderson, Yasmani Grandal, James McCann. You know you're going to have those guys. It's kind of just a question of who's going to bat where. So I think spring training is going to be interesting to see how batting lineups are constructed and how they kind of shuffle things around. Because, the leadoff question, how would you answer that right now? I don't think it's the easiest answer. You're not going to put Tim Anderson leadoff. He doesn't walk enough. I don't think Yoan is really a leadoff guy, even though, he's got good OBP and whatnot. But I don't see him batting leadoff. You're not going to put Eloy leading off. I mean, do you put Luis Robert because he's fast? I mean, those are going to be questions that are going to be asked throughout spring training.
Crazy idea here. What about Jose Abreu?
I knew you were going to say that.
I'm not against it. Like, I mean, I don't want to put somebody with... I don't want to put Yoan Moncada there. He's a young player, and I think you want to see him with runners on. You're not gonna put Yasmani Grandal there.
No.
You're right. Tim Anderson. If Tim Anderson could walk more and take up more pitches, I wouldn't be opposed to it. And honestly, if Tim Anderson gets off to a hot start like he did last year, I wouldn't be opposed to him having an opportunity to be the leadoff hitter. But I think Jose Abreu is your most polished hitter. His power numbers have dipped a little bit, so you're not losing that much. I don't see the harm in it. He's your best polished hitter. Let some of the younger guys bat in a lower spot in the order. And, that's some of the beauty of bringing the guys up now, is because you can fiddle with this lineup all season long and see where guys respond to. Sometimes guys it's a psychological thing. Batting fourth, they might really struggle. You put them fifth and you see a sharp improvement on hitting. You see if a guy's doing well and somebody's struggling, all right, maybe put somebody around them to protect them in the order, and you see an improvement. Young players, it's going to have to be a fluid thing. It's not like with a veteran lineup where, you can pencil guys in and just set that lineup. You're going to have to be fluid in the way you do this for the White Sox. And having the guy on your team who's your elder statesman, I don't see the issue with him getting the first crack at it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe they try something like that. Again, with this type of lineup, you could get a bit more creative. It's a good problem to have, to basically have a creative set of guys that you can put around different places. It means you got a lot of talent on your team.
Yeah, and there is a lot of talent on this team. And I think the early part of the season, you're going to see some struggles because that's what happens with the young teams.
It's part of the growing pains.
I think towards All-Star break and then, the coming out of the All-Star break is when you're going to see them in prime form, and you're going to see them really hot. And so you have this beginning part of the season where you have an opportunity to try these things. I think the question for this team is not how good they are. It's how good can they start and how good can they finish? Because I think in that middle chunk, they're going to be a solid team, after you cancel out all the ebbs and flows of a normal baseball season. I think they're going to be a really good team in the middle half of the season. If you break it into quarters, second and third quarter, it's going to be how do they start off the season? Can they find some sort of rhythm? And, if things aren't going their way, can they find ways to win games until, they right the ship? And how do they finish the season? And I think that's going to come down to managing and, some of the veteran players, imparting their wisdom and their leadership.
Yeah, no, I think that was very well said. I couldn't have said it better. It's one of those things where you go in and you know you're a young team, but you know the expectations, despite your age, despite your inexperience, are higher than they've been in years. So how do you handle that kind of thing? Does it take time to settle in? Do you get off to a good start? I mean, either could happen. It's just kind of what we're wondering right now. And then once you kind of, like you said, find a rhythm and maybe you start to feel comfortable, you get more experience, you get a taste of the show for some of the guys who haven't played much. And that's kind of where you start to find a rhythm. And then when the pressure of the late season comes, if you're in a playoff race, you know, how's that handled? And I think they'll eventually be able to handle it very well. It's just when you're a young team, that's all new to them. And sometimes you got to learn from mistakes and shortcomings to win. So it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle different situations this year.
Yeah. And, you know, quickly, I want to, you know, you mentioned some of the minor injuries, you know, the names that have some minor injuries right now, Yasmani Grandal, Lucas Giolito, and Gio Gonzalez. Grandal injured his calf in the weight room last week. And Giolito has a strained muscle in his chest, and Gonzalez is battling some left shoulder discomfort. But I think the best part about it is somebody asked Yasmani Grandal about it, and he goes, he laughed, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm just trying to get out of the running drills and spring training."
Yeah, it doesn't sound like there's too much concern.
Yeah, I'm not worried. I mean, of those, I would probably say the, you know, some stiffness in the shoulder of Gio Gonzalez. But, you know, those things kind of happen in spring training sometimes, you know, because you ease up in the off season, let your body heal, and then when you come back and ramp it up, you know, you can find some tightness, some stiffness. You know, if he's having those issues come, you know, March, mid-March, then, you know, you can maybe start to worry. But at this point, I'm not worried about anything.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think it's going to be one of those things where they'll be able to shake it off and they'll be right back on and it'd be like nothing happened.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to bring up is I don't think we talked about it, but the White Sox agreed in principle to signing international prospect, I'm going to butcher the name, Norgay Carlos Vera. So he signed with the White Sox with a $1.5 million bonus. He's a 19-year-old pitcher that throws 97 miles an hour.
Oh, there you go. Stack up the pitching.
Yeah, another Cuban player. All Cuban players belong to the White Sox.
Yeah, right.
I'm just antsy for games to start being played.
Yeah, you know, I hate to bring it back to my team, but I'd love to watch some of those games on the Marquee Network. Oh, wait, but I have Comcast.
Oh, you know, I meant to bring that up. I totally forgot. Did you see who the Marquee Network signed to be a game analyst?
Mark Grace?
Mark Grace.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about that. He's one of my all-time favorite players.
Yeah. That is cool. I was always kind of hoping that he'd have a nice reunion with the Cubs, so to speak, and he'd be involved with the team in some capacity. And now we're seeing that. So that's cool.
Yeah. So I'm kind of excited for that. You know, I know he's I know he's had a tough road after he retired. You know, some personal issues, but I'm glad for him to be back in the fold with the Cubs, and I'm excited for to see him talk Cubs more. You know, like as far as my favorite Cubs, he's probably top three.
Really? That big of a fan? I mean, he did have more hits in the 1990s than any other player in baseball.
So, I mean, if you look at the 90s, I was a teenager. So, yeah, I was, you know, 1990, I guess I was 13. So it was like, that was like 14, 15, 16, 17. Those were like my, you know, like some of my formidable years. And so that Mark Grace doing those things, he was like a doubles machine, and I really liked him. So, like, you know, if you ask me my all-time favorite Cubs, you know, I probably Andre Dawson, number one. Ryan Sandberg, Mark Grace.
I'm surprised that list didn't include...
Well, he just transcends, like, because, you know, that's... yeah, John Lackey and Buttercup, that's like transcends baseball.
wouldn't it be great if just they started doing marquee broadcasts and they're talking and all of a sudden you hear and they're like, uh-oh, is that John Lackey and Buttercup? And then John Lackey just grabs the mic. Yeah, it's John Lackey.
Or, you know, the Ricketts family is like, you know, due to financial struggles, we've got a new sales strategy at with our organization. They're like, can we cut to the video? And it just shows John Lackey on Buttercup at Gallagher Way lassoing people and be like, you ain't gonna let go until you buy tchotchkes.
There's people like trying to sprint out of Gallagher Way. You got like a giant lasso that's like a 30-foot like circumference, and he just grabs like loads of people and hauls them in.
They're trying to run to the diagonal corner, you know, the of Clark and Addison, and they're just across the street and they're like frantically running, and then suddenly your legs come out from under him, face planted in the ground, and then you just see John Lackey pulling him back and be like, I didn't see enough tchotchkes in your pocket.
And then he takes out like a branding like thing and like he brands them if they haven't bought enough tchotchkes.
He takes the rope at, you know, the one that is tied to their legs. He flings the other one over a street light, lifts them up, and then shakes the change out of their pockets. Like, he's got a collection plate underneath. It's like, that seems about right.
His collection plate is just his hat. He turns his hat upside down and collects it in his hat.
He's like, here you go, Mr. Ricketts. Put that in your fund.
Ting!
When the hat's full, he starts using his spittoon, and Ricketts is like, I don't know if I want that money.
Maybe I do, but can you wash it first?
Can you give it a quick rinse?
Go over to the official Ricketts hoses over at Gallagher Way, or go over to the fountain area and wash it there, please.
You can wash it off in the cooling station out in Gallagher Way. With using the misting spray.
Just imagine, like, just little weenie Ricketts just standing there as big bad John Lackey's lassoing people for money.
Oh, my goodness. John Lackey. So, I want to shift gears here, and I want to talk about something that I think every single Bulls fan has been talking about over the weekend.
Okay.
And that is the interview with Zach LaVine, where the fans let their feelings be known.
Yeah, I take it you saw that clip with the interview.
Yeah. Everybody and their mother in Chicago, unless they're somehow a transplant that likes the Knicks, they hate John Paxson.
Yeah.
There's nobody that likes him. Nobody thinks he's doing a good job. I think his mother was in the crowd booing. He's done a terrible job of this team. And the only thing people can do is go, well, he drafted Jimmy Butler at number 30. Okay. How many years can you hang your hat on it? How many teams has he been on since he left the Bulls?
Three.
Is at that point, he's been on three other teams. How many teams does he have to play for before you could just stop hanging your hat on that? This is a bad team. This is a bad team.
You don't have any All-Stars representing, and you're hosting the All-Star game.
You hosted the All-Star game, and you had no All-Stars, albeit Zach LaVine should have been. But it's embarrassing. You're the third longest tenured front office person in the league, and you have exactly zero titles as a GM.
You have one single trip to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you are 1-4 in the Eastern Conference Final games.
And all of your success has come on the backs of a Tom Thibodeau and Derrick Rose.
Yeah.
Like how?
And that was what, a few year stretch?
Yeah. We've already counted out how many coaches that, you know, most GMs don't get to hire and fire very many head coaches before you go, well, you were the one that made this choice. It didn't work out. Maybe it's time to move on from you. What is John Paxson? I think we counted something like 8 coaches he's fired? 9?
Well, let's see.
It's a good number. And,
let's see. I'm just trying to think of all of them. You had the first Jim Boylan, right?
Yeah, let's see. Bulls.
Skiles. Del Negro. Thibodeau. Hoiberg. Now, Tim Floyd was before them, right?
Because
he was right after Jackson.
Let's see.
I know there's a few other names I'm probably forgetting.
So he, Bill Cartwright, Pete Myers was interim, Scott Skiles, Pete Myers again, Jim Boylan, the other Jim Boylan, Vinny Del Negro, Tom Thibodeau, Fred Hoiberg, and then how much longer is this Jim Boylan going to last?
National media members and other people are cracking jokes related to Jim Boylan. Like that's how bad it is.
Joe Crowley is reporting that the Bulls are in early stages of adding new executives to their front office.
Yeah, but wasn't there also a report that just that came out said they're basically just going to shuffle chairs on the deck of the Titanic, more or less?
I wouldn't be surprised. That's a very Reinsdorf way to do things.
They'll give Pax a new title.
They'll promote him. He'll fail up.
So like Kenny Williams basically become like VP or whatever.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't care. If they want to pay him, that's fine. But bring somebody in here that's going to do a good job.
Right.
It's going to draft better, going to develop better, hire better coaches. Like legitimate coaches, not laughing stocks.
Right. I mean, like, you look at, does Kenny Williams do a lot right now with the White Sox anyway? Like, he just kind of has that title. He's just kind of there.
I don't know what he does.
Because, I mean, Rick Hahn is the one pulling all the strings there. So, if that was the case with Paxson, if he was just around, but he wasn't pulling any strings, he was just kind of a figurehead, then fine. As long as he's not doing anything.
So interesting developments. And I think after this season, it's going to be very telling, because if they survive this season, Gar and Pax, then they're just untouchable. So,
Fire Gar Pax is currently trending on Twitter right now.
That should be number one on Twitter until they get fired. And then just stay for another week with
you see shirts, you see billboards, you see hashtags on Twitter, you hear chants, fire Gar Pax is everywhere. But boy, I got to tell you, That floor is awesome at the United Center. Have you seen it?
Uh-uh.
It is so cool.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it is awesome.
Do you want to talk Blackhawks here?
Yeah, I got a few thoughts.
So, the Blackhawks are still not good. They're still last place in the division. You know, after a 4-4-10 stretch of their last 10, they've fallen to last place, and they're not in a playoff standing right now.
No.
What happens with this team? Where do they go?
See, I just see this as they're probably not going to do much at the deadline. You're not going to buy. I don't think you're going to sell off a lot of things. I think they kind of stand pat. Unless they surprise us with something, but I just don't see much being done.
What I do like is that they brought Nick Seeler in, and right away he goes to throwing fists. Like right away he's throwing fists at other teams. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a feel good story for me.
You know what I think? You know what I think has been really just mind boggling this year, especially lately? Alex DeBrincat has had a horrible year.
Yeah, it has not been good. Not been good at all.
Frankly, I think it's just a down year. That's just my opinion. I'm not worried in the long run, but it's still kind of baffling. And knock on wood.
Yeah, this is a he needs to be better. You know, you said Blackhawks standing pat. You know, there's a possibility that they can move Eric Gustafson.
For a big gulp?
Well, here's the thing. Is he still leads all the Blackhawks defensemen in points.
He's a valuable scorer. There's no question about that.
But he's only 27. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. What kind of money do you plan to throw him if you plan to re-sign him? So, you know, can you get something for him? I'm sure there's going to be a playoff team that's willing to give you something for him.
I wouldn't expect much, but I definitely think he is tradable. He's only got
a $1.2 million cap hit, so that's, you know, teams don't have to make, you know, teams with very little cap room can still fit him in.
Right. No, I think he's definitely tradable. I don't think you should expect much, but I definitely think he is tradable.
I mean, anything you can get for a guy that you're probably going to lose in free agency in a couple months anyway.
Right.
It just seems like it's worth it.
Sure. I mean, like you said, the guy can score.
That's something.
Like I said, I just wish he would become a forward because he's got a pretty wicked shot.
I wouldn't be surprised if somebody did try that.
Right.
I don't know if his career is at as a defenseman, but I don't know. It's not a lot of moves they're going to be make. Is, you know, Duncan Keith reiterated that he's not waiving his no movement clause. You're not trading Seabrook, especially since he's injured, unless you're padding that, and it's going to be a Hossa type thing where you're just moving the contract off and he's going to be a long term IR.
Ring ring, Phoenix Coyotes. Hello.
And then, it's the team is scoring goals right now, and they've been fun to watch for the most part. They're just not a good team.
No, I mean they've put themselves in a position where in order to make the playoffs, they would have had to continue to play flawless hockey, and you knew that wasn't going to be sustainable. So I think just the real shame is the slow start they got off to, because had they not gotten off to that slow start, they'd probably be in a playoff position right now, and not a high position by any means, probably a wild card, but still, you have a few more wins and suddenly you're in the playoff race, and you look at some of those awful losses early on, you know, then it'd be a whole different game, and you'd say, well, you know what, slumps happen, they're not going to win every game. It's just that when they put themselves in this position, they basically said, okay, well, now that we're in this position, we're going to have to play some pretty flawless hockey the rest of the way if we want a shot here.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah. you know, you're looking at the wild card standings, and it's Calgary and the Coyotes, and then Nashville, Winnipeg, Minnesota, and then the Blackhawks. So you're at this point, I think last time we talked about it, they were like 3 points or 4 points out. Now they're six.
Yeah. Yeah. And then next thing you know, you have several guys you have to leapfrog, or not guys, teams you have to leapfrog.
I mean, granted, they've got the two teams that are in the wild card spot have 30 and those are wins. So yeah, you're 6 points out. That's not a good look there.
I mean, that last loss in Winnipeg when they blew the 2-0 lead, that was a gut punch. That was
bad. That was a real bad one. And granted, the Blackhawks have Calgary has 60 games played. Coyotes have 61. The Blackhawks only have 58. So you can make some of those points up there, but still, you've got to start winning these games if you want to make the playoffs. And, you know, do you want to make the playoffs? Is it worth it going in there and getting bounced early?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the NHL, it is worth trying to make the playoffs. I not in terms of making moves, but as a team, I think your eye should always be on the playoffs, just because hockey tends to be more of a crapshoot than other sports. But I do think that the chances are pretty much, if the Blackhawks got into the playoffs, they'd probably get destroyed by St. Louis right away. But, you know, it's not like the NBA. It's, you know, you get in and things can happen. But I just think the way this Hawks team is built, the way they look, it's a major, major chance that they would just get destroyed.
And then the other question comes in is, Dominic Kubalik is going to be a free agent at the end of the season.
Yes, he is. I think the question is there. Do you value him? Do you think he's going to continue to give you that value? Or is this just kind of a flash in the pan year? I think that's going to be something they're really going to evaluate.
Right, right. Absolutely. I think the first question comes down to is Bowman your general manager?
Going forward. Well, I think they gotta go in a new direction. I really do, but I don't know. Will they?
I have a feeling they do. You know, the Blackhawks under Rocky Wirtz have shown that they are a loyal franchise, but winning is very important, and they're not loyal to the point of stupidity.
Jerry Reinsdorf.
Yes. So I would be, if I'm a betting man, I'm putting money down that he's gone at the end of the year.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not as sure. I think he should, but I don't know. I'm still waiting to see Rocky Wirtz do something big. I mean, firing Joel Quenneville, I think, was really a McDonough-Bowman type deal, but something franchise changing like this. You know, to be fair, most of his tenure has been winning and winning cups and going on playoff runs, but we're going to be going on year number three without the playoffs potentially. So that's got to be the line you got to draw. I don't know if he will draw it or not. I've never seen him face several years of losing. We haven't seen it yet.
No, we really haven't. So it's a, I think there's a change of brewing. Oh man, I just turned the All-Star game on. That is an awesome floor.
Isn't it cool? I kind of just wish they'd keep that the rest of the year.
Can they? Are they allowed to?
I don't know. I think if you host the All-Star game, you should have the option to do that.
I mean, you can get rid of the clearly the All-Star game portion of it.
Yeah, you could put the Bulls logo in the middle.
Yeah, but the rest of it. Yeah, the rest of it, keep that. That's great.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that neat?
Clearly, Jerry Reinsdorf had nothing to do with that.
Who's Jerry Reinsdorf would be his big face plastered on it. No, I'm just kidding. That'd be the Cubs All-Star game hosting. It would just be a big smiling Ricketts face. Go to Gallagher Way.
Go to Gallagher Way. We've got tchotchkes and pumpkins.
We also got plenty of hot chocolate. Yeah.
If you're feeling a little chilly.
Tom, it's 85 degrees out. The pumpkins are rotting in the sun.
Yeah, but you know what? There's, with the wind coming off the lake, you could get a little chill. Hot chocolate time.
Just spray some Febreze over those pumpkins.
I'm going to upsell you some marshmallows. You want a little squirt of cream, whipped cream on that?
Only $5 extra.
I guess the last thing we could talk about is Bears. There's really nothing, but I'm tired of Andy Dalton talk.
Yeah, I've kind of drained that stuff out of my mind. It's just no more thinking about it, no more talking about it, and I'm going to tune it out on social media as well.
Yeah, I really want to block the term Andy Dalton. Be done with it. I don't see him as an option for the Bears. If you're going with Andy Dalton, it's not like, oh, he's a, you know, you're going to sign him for 1 year for, you know, not much money. And then he's just suddenly going to turn this team around. Like, he has not been, has he ever won a playoff game?
I don't think so.
Like, why?
He goes 10-6 every year and then loses in the playoffs.
Yeah, why? What makes you think he's suddenly going to have this resurgence? Is people think he's like, oh, well, he's going to be the next, what's his face that was a quarterback for the Titans this year? Ryan Tannehill. Why? What makes you think Ryan Tannehill was that good? Ryan Tannehill had the best running attack in football.
Say, that was Henry's doing right there. Henry, yeah. And good coaching.
Yeah, you had great coaching. You had an awesome offensive line and an amazing running game. It's the same thing that the 49ers did. So, you know, if you're gonna put that together, why not just keep the guy you got? Maybe that'll help him. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for bringing in some competition. I don't think I really want Andy Dalton.
No, I don't think so. I think Andy Dalton is going to cost you enough money where you have to start him.
Right, and do you really want to eat cap space with that?
Yeah, you already have limited cap space. You need to improve several positions. You know, do you want to tie up all this money on the last year of your quarterback, drafted quarterback being affordable? Like, no, I just think it makes sense to build up this team as best you can and then hope that, you know, one more year having, you know, having a change of philosophy of how you play call, and then bringing in your quarterback whisper and count on that. I mean, I think that's a much more solid play. You know, definitely you have to bring somebody in, but you can't bring in somebody that's going to come in with the expectation of starting.
Yeah, it's going to be harder to do.
Like, I know nobody wants to hear this, and I know you didn't want to hear it, is I think Case Keenum is the guy you bring in.
I'm okay with Case Keenum, frankly.
Because I think he's going to be very affordable.
Yep.
And he's a guy that, in a pinch, can definitely start for you.
Yep.
And he's going to push Mitch because, you know, if Mitch doesn't play well, Case Keenum, and if you come out and say, you know what, Case Keenum beat him out, you live with that. But, you know, if Case Keenum, if Mitch Trubisky takes that step forward and then Case Keenum has to sit on the bench, then nobody's disappointed. If you bring in Andy Dalton, then Andy Dalton has to become the guy that you're like, well, we're paying a lot of money. We're going to have to start this guy. And at that point, you might as well just cut Mitch Trubisky and move on.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Because if you sign somebody, bench Mitch Trubisky, because there's people that are like, well, you know, let him sit for a year. No, that's not how that's going to work. You know,
not at this point.
Yeah, if after the last year of John Fox, if you would have had him sat for a year, that works. But if you at this point, if you just have him sit, it doesn't work. You might as well move on and just start fresh right now.
Could you imagine a whole year with Mike Lennon?
That would have been terrible.
Well, I mean, you did have Mark Sanchez.
Oh, butt fumble.
Yeah.
You know what the best part about butt fumble is? If he made a comeback, he would start on the suspended list.
Yeah, that's true.
He had performance enhancing drugs as a guy that was a glorified coach. He was a player coach.
Yeah, that was something.
Ah, good old butt fumble.
I remember it well.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody so much for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, TuneIn app, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, just hit subscribe. Share this podcast with your friends that like Chicago sports. That's how we grow the podcast. Make sure you follow us on social media at ShyFanPat1, at Swirsky Sports, Facebook.com/SwirskySports, SwirskySports.com. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Cubs win! What a lucky break! The good Lord wants the Cubs to win!
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win! Cubs win! Cubs win!
Oh, I don't want her. You can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the planes.
Bears 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...